Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains August 8th through the 14th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Welcome to Activate Yourself with Geeta Sidhu Rob, where we feature otherwise normal people who, because of events in their life, have turned left and done unusual, inspiring, incredible things, like build a business, become a happiness expert, marry a prince, create an empire, or like your host, set up a health and wellness business, Nosh Detox. Here's your host, Geeta Sidhu Rob.
Hi, my name is Geeta Sidhu Rob, and this is Activate Yourself. And as always, the goal is to, on this very wet and windy day in England, which is never going to see summer again, apparently, as long as we live, because this is already April, I want to bring you some heartwarming inspiration. The fact that you think you can't do something doesn't make it true. Because what happens when you think you can do something is you find you can't do it. And then when you think you can't do something, you find the universe has completely other plans. And something knocks you off course, makes you do a left turn, and then you get activated somehow. There's like some superpower that comes from inside and pushes you forward into this life you never knew you were going to lead. And the woman we have as a guest today, somebody that inspires me immensely, and I'm a tricky cow, frankly. There's just not that many people that inspire me. I don't go around thinking, oh my God, you're just amazing. And today's guest, I do think that. I look at her, I talk to her, and I'm like, please be my friend. Really? Oh. And you're amazing. And she's the kind of person that does one great thing and then thinks, ah, what should I do next? And then does another great thing and then think, ah, what should I do? And just bloody keeps doing it. So on some level, she's quite irritating because she's so good at so many things. But on the other thing, oh my God, wait till you hear about what she's done because she's amazing. Alison, welcome. It's so nice of you to hang out with me for this short period of time. And I did not know that in 1994, you did a public offering.
Yes, I did. So long story short, and thank you for having me on the podcast, by the way. And I like to hang out with you. So it's an equal playing field here. Let's just get that straight. But so when I was a student, I got into debt. And, you know, needs must, I had to get out of debt. And I was really scared of telling my father that I had wasted my student grant on failed driving lessons because I failed my driving test 5 times. And I thought, OK, Cork, you're going to have to think fast here. And the only thing I could do really was talk for my supper. And I knew I was good at talking and I suspected I was good at selling because I got into trouble at school for selling Conkers to my classmates. So clearly there was a selling gene in there. So I made up this little restaurant guide and sold advertising, which worked because when people go to Cambridge for the day, they spend 3 hours there on average and they need to eat something. And in those days, there wasn't much good food. So I called it rather euphemistically good food in Cambridge. And yeah, with it, there wasn't any, I can assure you, not in 1982. And that did quite well. And again, long story short, I left university and set these up through all the university towns in the United Kingdom.
Oh my God, that's so clever.
And I just thought, okay, if it works, you know, don't, if the wheel is working, don't try and fix it. So I just carried on. And some London businessman who was a friend of a friend had heard of me and picked up the phone one day and said, will you come work for me? And I thought, you know, I'm wise enough to know that I probably won't make too much money with him, but because he's, you know, he's the boss, but why don't I sit at the feet of the master and learn? Because I'm really young. And that's exactly what I should do and not worry about making money. So I said yes. And we started this publishing business. And in those were the days of mail order, when you filled out little forms and sent them through the post and got your book back or whatever it was. And we had many, my job was to think up the titles of books that would sell. So we sort of reverse engineered it. I was a student of markets. Find out what the public wants, then give it to them. You know, I always say in interiors, people stroke pink sofas in shops, but they buy beige ones. Find out what people want and give it to them. First rule of business. So my job was to think up the titles of books that would sell. One of our best sellers was How to Talk to Your Cat, which
really
completely diagrams.
That's hysterical.
Because, of course, you know that when they lift their tail in a certain way, it means a certain thing, et cetera, et cetera. So I bombed down to Brighton to the cat shop and got the lady to write How to Talk to Your Cat. And that became a bestseller. But joking aside, we had many failures and we were close to collapse. And then one day I noticed a leaflet come through my door for something called the Government Auction Handbook. And this, at that time, was a closed shop of auctions where dealers bought the goods of companies who'd had their belongings sequestrated by VAT or tax authorities and sold for only 10% of their value at auction. So if you knew where to go, you could get anything from a speedboat to a computer at only 10% of its real value.
Wow.
Amazing. And what we did was break it open and write a book about it and tell the public. It went bananas. All the national papers covered it. The Mail did a double page spread. I actually got a death threat in the Post,
presumably
from the dealers who didn't like the fact that their cozy little world had been destroyed. The public went nuts for it. We sold, I can't remember now, but I think it was something like 300,000 copies in a few weeks. So it kind of, if it had been on the Times bestseller list, it would have just been at the top forever. But it wasn't, because we were a private publishing company. And we literally floated the company off the back of that book. That my favorite day was when the post office rang me and said, we've got a bit of a problem. And I'd been waiting 2 days and the ad hadn't produced a single response. And I thought, okay, that it didn't work. That's it. You know, it's curtains for us. We're going to close the company. And then the phone rang and it was the post office. And they said, we have a slight problem. We're going to have to send vans round. We can't carry the post. And so the ad had come out on the Saturday. The post had obviously taken its time. It was Monday or Tuesday by then, whatever. Post was faster in those days, I think. And they came with two or three vans. And I think we took £80,000 on the first day, which in 1992 was a huge sum of money. Huge.
And you could buy a house for that.
Yeah, pretty much. In certain parts of the country, you could. And the rest, as they say, was history. And we floated the company principally off the back of the success of that book. So whilst I started by saying to myself, I don't really have much to offer, but I can learn at the feet of the master, I ended by being able to say to myself, actually, I picked that book. I picked that title and I took it to him and told him, we need this book. This is going to sell. I sensed it. And that's all about gut instinct. And you know that in business. And I know that you've got to trust your gut.
I love that. That is just amazing. So how do you go from this scrappy hustler? Because, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Proud of it.
And I consider that a huge compliment, to be fair. So how do you go from being a scrappy hustler to the doyen of QVC selling homeware by Alison Gore, which I frigging love? I have to say that when I met you through your third iteration, which we'll get to in a minute. I had no idea that you were this QVC queen, and I frigging loved it when I found out. I've never watched QVC in my life. But how do you then go? So you go and do, I take it you made money out of the public offering.
Yes. Yes, I did.
How do you then go from there? And by the way, like this home business, your house is exquisite, so as you can see, but it is insanely beautiful. So it always feels like you're living in a very warm, very beautiful place walking around your home.
Oh, thank you. It is warm. That's true.
It is very warm. It isn't. The thing I dislike about a lot of beautiful homes is they feel like very cold places, and yours doesn't.
How I would agree.
Does this amazingly scrappy person turn up to be on QVC? How long have you been on QVC?
Oh, 13 years?
Bloody hell. How did that happen?
So when we went public, so I'm going to go back very, very briefly. So when we were meeting the brokers to go public, there was a lunch. And during that lunch, there was myself, the male broker, and my male partner. We were sort of co-directors of the company. The broker didn't address me once during the lunch, not once. Because even though I was the person who was responsible for bringing the product that made the company go public, I clearly didn't count because I was a woman and it was 1992. And when the company went public, I sat briefly on the board. I was the only woman. And I just looked around this boardroom and I thought, this is not going to be fun. I just know it. And actually, I've done the really exciting entrepreneurial bit, which is bring it to the market. That was great. What a ride. That was great. So I think I'm going to leave now. I'm going to cash in my chips. Thank you very much. And I'm going to go and do what feeds my soul.
So let me stop you for a minute.
Yes.
There is a place where that's actually a very intelligent decision, because you can fight it. You can push the boulder uphill and what is it, Sisyphus all over again. You can do that, but there is a place where that would have cost you emotionally, mentally, and physically so much. So it's actually a really interesting but very good decision, because women don't like to give up at that stage. They think, sod it, no, I'm going to fight through. And you actually took a very clever decision to put your needs first.
Well, I think that's why a lot of women, ironically, become entrepreneurs, because they realize it's an environment in which they can control their destiny. And we'll talk about the charity that I set up to help women start their own business. But, you know, again, people said to me, well, isn't that a bit sort of anti-feminist to start a network that's only available for women? And I said, now, look, if that's what it takes, because women do tend to lack confidence in some circumstances, if that's what it takes to get women to come through the door and sit down and realize that they are more than capable of starting a business, if that's what it takes just to create an all-female environment so they feel accepted and welcomed and you know, comfortable, then that's what we do. Path of least resistance. Yes. And sometimes that is the smart way to go.
My God,
I didn't feel it was a failure. I actually sort of waved them all goodbye sitting around the board table and thought, have fun, smoke cigars. I'm the one who made the money. Bye. See you later.
Genius. I wish I'd done that way earlier. We're going to go for a quick break and then we're going to come back and find out what Alison did next, because it feels, feels a bit like Louisa May Alcott came visiting us. We'll be back in a sec.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, so we're back. What did you do next?
So I sat down, and again, it was one of those what would my father think moments. I thought, you know, actually, when I was a student, I used to redecorate my room, although, you know, your student room is grotty. And I used to redecorate my room every term, but in a theme, like it'd be a Moroccan theme or an Indian theme with drapes and pictures and this and that. And the cleaners would actually queue up outside to come and have a look and see what I'd done that term with my bed. So, and I'd love, joking aside, I'd always loved homemaking. My happiest memories were sitting next to my granny in Germany with her Singer sewing machine and watching her foot on the pedal, just sort of rhythmically moving the pedal and making things, and her cupboard full of fabrics and her home and the smell of it and the feel of it. And I thought, I want to be a homemaker, but there's a slight problem with that. And I think my parents might be quite disappointed that I'm not pursuing a career. And then I had a light bulb moment, looked across the pond, saw Martha Stewart, who at the time, I think her empire was worth probably better part of $1 billion at that stage. I thought, there's a smart woman. She's turned homemaking into a business. And I think I want to be the British Martha Stewart, and we don't have one. We have women who are people who cook. We have people who garden. They have these separate verticals, but we don't have anybody who creates home professionally.
And is the face of it.
Yeah, is the face of it. So I decided I would do that. And then I had to work out how to do it. And I analysed all the people who were on television. So I thought, I need a television programme. But how do I get onto television? Because I've got no television presenting experience. And I analysed that most of the people on television were journalists. So I took a few steps back and thought, right, I'll write a book on property and interiors, because the minute I do that, it must be true because it's in writing and therefore I'm an expert. And the minute I'm an expert, I can leapfrog to the next stone across the pond, which is I can talk on television or radio because I'm an expert. So I managed to persuade Piatkas to publish a book called The Streetwise Guide to Renovating Your Home, because one thing I'd done a lot of was property renovation and I could write about it. Wrote that book and then hit an absolute wall because nobody wanted to employ me on television. And I kept all my rejection letters because I wanted to learn from them. And they were literally, the file was that thick. And it was terrible. My favorite rejection letter was from a Meridian TV executive who said, and I quote, "Dear Alison, thank you so much for sending me your showreel, which I've watched with great interest. As you know, there's always a long line of people wanting to be television presenters. And having watched your showreel, I can see absolutely no reason why you should go to the front of that line." I mean, it was like the shittiest rejection letter ever. And you felt his misogyny oozing through the page.
No, wait. Can I see you and raise you? Because I did so much TV over my 20s. And I always got this, oh my God, you're so great on TV. You need an agent and you need to get on and everything. And I was like, meh, okay. But I was literally the only brown person doing any of this. There was no call for a brown person on TV. Like, why would we need you type thing? And I wrote to several agents. And one of the agents wrote back and said, "I think this is actually a very good idea. If you're willing to have sex with me, I will put..."
No!
No, I absolutely promise you. He said that to me. He said, "If you're willing, you're a good looking girl. He was the ugliest, oldest, fattest man. But not that I would have, but do you know what I mean? You're just like..." He actually said to me, I'd forgotten that till this minute, "If you have sex with me, I will put you up for... I'll be your agent."
Now, I don't know what decade that was, but you know, in the 80s and 90s, that was the way it was.
100,000
million. Yeah.
I've forgotten about that. Okay, go.
Anyway, so I sat on the kitchen floor, cried a few puddles, and then thought, how dare you? How dare you Watch write me. To me and tell me what I can't and can do, what I can't do. So I thought, no, keep going. Because, you know, I tried to remember that saying, which is when you're on the sort of brink of your greatest failure, so to speak, you could also be on the brink of your greatest success. You just don't know what that tipping point moment is. So keep going. So I wrote a letter to the commissioning editor of ITV, daytime commissioning editor. And she said, "Look, I'm not sure about this, but I'll give you 30 minutes on this day at our offices in Gray's Inn Road." And I thought, right. And I always say, once you allow me in the building, you cannot stop me running around the corridors. Exactly. So I went to this meeting and it was one of those real seminal moments where just before I walked through the door, I was wearing my orange power blazer. I remember that. And before I walked through the door, I thought, "Alison, not to put pressure on yourself, but the next 30 minutes are possibly the most important 30 minutes of your life. So don't fuck it up."
I said that to myself a lot, the don't fuck it up part. So, God, please let me not screw this up.
But I was visual, because I visualized so clearly, and I think visualization is immensely powerful. I visualized exactly what I wanted this series to be, and I was living it in my head and in my body. And so I just walked through that door, sat down, and just socked it to her. And she commissioned a daytime series for ITV called Home in the Country.
My God. Did you write back to Meridian Man and go...
Yeah, not worth my time or the paper.
No, exactly.
But he lost his job 6 months later. I do know
that.
Oh,
no. What is that? Sad is that?
It's such are the vagaries of television. Anyway, she commissioned this series called Home in the Country, which I wrote, and it was such a series of love. Everything came from me. It was passion. It was belief. It was decorative ideas, recipes, and we filmed it in my cottage in Wales. And I wrote and presented it, and it got unbelievable ratings, got record ratings. And I did two or three series of this. And I would have carried on until today, but it was a very expensive series to make. I mean, when I think of the numbers now, and that was back in 1997, it sort of shocks me because television's changed enormously over the period. But having said that, there is a sort of circular thing in that when you later ask me, what am I going to do next? There might be a little bit of a return to that era and
next in a hot minute
and that zeitgeist. So that was this. So then I thought, OK, that's it. So then from there came Alison at Home, the website, the product line, the TV shopping, the licensing. That was the key that unlocked the door, literally. And it got me my audience. And I'll tell you a very quick story. That audience has been so, even though I only did the programs for like 5 years, I think I stopped in 2000. And when was it now? Two years ago, I was up a mountain in Morocco. I was climbing
Mount
Toukbal. And I was sitting in a refuge with a lovely young couple in their 20s from Devon. And we were exchanging names. And they said, oh, who are you? And I said, oh, I'm Alison, Alison Cork. And they said, what? The Alison Cork. And I said, depends. I think there's more than one of me in the UK, actually, but which one are you looking for? And they said, what, Home in the Country, Alison Cork? And I said, now, hang on a minute. You can't be You can't be north of 25. You have not seen Home in the Country. And they said, no, but my mother never stops banging on about it and says it was the best television she ever saw in her life. And the point about it, and really this encapsulates what I feel about home. I always say interiors is not about sofas and cushions. It is not. It's about a feeling. It's how your home makes you feel.
Yeah.
And the whole Home in the Country series was aimed at making people feel wonderful about the place they called home, whether it was modest or grand, or up a tower bloke, whatever, wherever.
This is yours.
It's such a personal thing. There's no right, there's no wrong, but it's about a feeling. And that was what I loved, that series reached out to so many people who just said, for 45 minutes a week, however unpleasant my own life might be, I can escape into yours and be part of this warmth. And I love it. And that was one of the most soul-feeding, enriching things I've ever done. Just loved that series.
I love that because I think it's really important. I remember when, you know, because when we got divorced, we ended up homeless and three small kids, and I was renting these places, which started off with a shoebox and slowly got bigger. And my only goal whenever we could get to a bigger place was that I remember my daughter saying to me, she goes, I don't know how you did it, but we'd go to school in the morning and we'd come back in the evening in a new house. And you made it all work. And one of the things that I use, because I got thrown out of flower arranging at school because they didn't like, apparently I was just not a flower arranger, which is ironic because I love it, but they threw me out. So I've just never been that, Gigi interior design, very creative, but I never saw it as this thing. And the one thing that changed my life every time with these horrible, desperate days of poverty and living off £14 a day with three small kids was that you had paint. You had paint.
Yeah.
You had painting, you had Indian fabrics, and you had old saris, and you had growing up with my mother sewing, because we're living in the middle of the wilds of Malawi and there wasn't a hell of a lot else to do, so you made stuff, and if you saw it
absolutely
in a magazine you could recreate it.
Beautiful.
And it is, people underestimate how utterly life-affirming it is to be able, and I would put one pink wall up and then I would put a thing up here and whatever, and it changes your life because it changes. You come home and it feels like your home. It's a place where you belong, and even if the rest of the world doesn't let you belong, this is a space where you have roots, you belong, and you matter. Yeah. Because
it's so important. And I always say home is a place you shouldn't want to leave in the morning, and you should you can't wait to get back to in the evening. It embraces you. That's home.
Yeah, and it should always. One of my clients, I remember, a very, very wealthy young man who unfortunately inherited all this money because everybody in his family died and he was completely alone. And he would travel a lot. And he'd say, the thing is, when you travel, it's meant to be more comfortable than where you live. But where I live is so lovely, I can't wait to get back. And I remember thinking, I know how that feels. I know that my bed is just gorgeous. We're going to go for a break now. And when we come back, I want to hear about this other iteration of you with Make It Your Business, which is how you and I originally met.
Let's talk politics.
Yes, let's do it. Okay, we'll be back in a minute.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, we're back. Let's really upset everyone. Let's talk politics. Because you and I love politics down to our core.
Yes. So I'm now fast forwarding to, well, I don't know, I suppose the 2000s. And I was building a family. And I was renting a house in, where was it now? Pimlico. And one day the doorbell rang and there was this blousy lady on a bicycle. And I said, oh, hello, who are you? And she said, well, I'm actually the landlord. I thought I'd come round and just check you out, so to speak. I said, oh, hello, well, my name's Alison. She said, yes, I'm Anne Jenkin. And that was the lady who is now Baroness Jenkin in the House of Lords. And so, again, cutting a long story short, and she's, I mean, she is just a tour de force. But
she's amazing.
She sort of collects her life's mission, for those who don't know of her and if you don't look her up, is to encourage women into public office and particularly to become MPs. And I remember she clearly, you know, when she meets a woman, she'll assess her very quickly and decide whether or not she thinks, yes, that she could be good. Let's go for it. She actually, and this is a matter of public record, met our current Secretary of State for Education, Gillian Keegan, in the queue for, I think, either the bar or the loo at the theatre. That's where they met.
Never knew that. That's amazing.
And that's on public record, so I haven't shared any secrets there. And she just sort of met Gillian, spoke to her and thought, yep. And, you know, she's got an instinct. Anyway, so we became friends. Now, she is a Conservative MP, and as an entrepreneur, I felt that was probably my more natural home. So I became involved in politics, but always on the periphery. I never, in all honesty, Geeta, never wanted to be an MP for a very specific reason. And I was very honest with Anne about that, for a very specific reason, because I think MPs, when they're good MPs, are working very hard in their constituency on very specific local matters. Now, I am somebody who loves problem solving. So in that respect, I probably would have enjoyed it. You know, if you come to me in my surgery and you tell me that you've got a problem, I will go for it to try and solve that problem. And nothing gives me more pleasure. But what I realized about myself was that I tended to gravitate more towards broader sort of economic issues and women in the economy in particular. And that's where Make It Your Business came from, because I thought, hang on a minute. If I could only describe my career in one word, or what it's given me, entrepreneurship, what is that one word? It's freedom. It's given me freedom. When you make your own, you know, when you make your own money, you are the master of your destiny and everything else falls into place. It shapes your character, your family, your relationship, everything, just everything. And so I you know, really feel that entrepreneurship has been pivotal in my life. And if I had my choices again, I would be an entrepreneur again. And so I got very interested in why more women didn't run their own business, given how much benefit it had brought to me. But equally, I understood why they probably didn't, because having started my business with no experience, no knowledge, no mentor back in the 80s, I know how hard it is if you've got no one to reach out to. And I suddenly thought, okay, let's form a nationwide network where we put aspiring female entrepreneurs who might just have this little thought in their head, it might be no more than that, in front of local, that's important because they've got to be relatable, local women who are successfully running a business. Could be a side hustle, could be a big business, doesn't, I don't care what size the business is. People bang on about unicorns, I care about acorns.
Yeah.
Because acorns are the 5.5 million small businesses of this country who are actually driving the engine room of the economy, make no mistake. And they are employing 99% of people as well.
Yeah.
So literally 99%. So I was interested in women and running their own business. And that's why I started Make It Your Business. But I also became more and more involved in politics and was persuaded to stand as a prospective candidate for London Mayor in 2018, which was great fun. And I felt I probably wasn't going to get it because I could see the candidates and had a good idea who I thought would get it. And he did. But I wanted to see what it was like to go through that interview process, because I think that not having done many interviews in my life, bear in mind as an entrepreneur, I've never actually worked for anybody.
Yeah.
I was quite curious to be tested. And the last interview, and again, I don't think I'm sharing any big secrets here, was 24 people interviewing me at one time on the hottest day in July, as it was that year, in a room where the aircon had broken down. And I was the last person of the 10, because I made the long list, which is the semi-final, so to speak. I was the last of the 10 to be interviewed. And I remember walking into this room, which was stifling.
They must be dying.
And I thought to myself, again, it was one of those moments, just like before I went into that interview with ITV. And I walked in the room and I looked at this horseshoe of suffering humans and thought, you know what? You're in a far worse state than I am. All I've got to do is stand up and tell you why I want to be mayor of London. So I really enjoyed the interview, and it's joking aside, it sort of taught me on a broader level that actually I do enjoy politics when it is constructive and it is about problem solving and it is about improving the lives of everyday people. Where I have lost some of my enthusiasm in recent months is just looking at the dissension that we have in this country and just feeling that we are, you know, there's a great sense of unease. That's probably the best way I can describe it. When I speak to people, particularly in London, and London has a terrible crime rate and women and feeling safe and all that stuff. You know, in London, we have a problem. And I don't know if that's symptomatic of the rest of the country, but certainly in London, we do. And I just think that politically, we need to sort our act out very, very quickly. London is a mess.
Yeah, and I feel also one of the issues I have around setting up W Corp was that I didn't feel, and it, for me, I have a very similar background to you in politics, only I was much more literally involved in the day-to-day version of it, was that I just feel that, well, governments don't have the sense they run the country anymore. And there's this, and that's a really terrifying sensation, because if what we're doing is having organizations run countries and run worlds, then we're in a very, very bad place, because the stakeholders that organizations and companies care about are not your everyday people. The role of government, the role of local government, the role of national government is to care about the people that are in that country, you know, and make their lives better. In an organization, your job is to make your shareholders' lives better, and you don't really care about anyone else. And they're really actually opposing forces. And I think we don't pay enough attention to that. And that is really a problem. And for me, I care that for women, it's a really big problem, because we're putting women in a position where when you stop hearing people, there's a hierarchy to not being heard, right? If you're not being heard, you still hear white men. You still hear rich white men. Then you hear not you know, maybe rich non-white men. Then you hear, I've done a study of this, ask me how I know. Then you hear poorer men. And then you hear rich women that won't be shut up. And then you'll start to hear brown and disadvantaged people. And then we'll put all women underneath that. And so there's a hierarchy. So when things go to hell, your shit's going to go to hell more than anyone else's is going to go to hell. And I think that's actually an issue that we're not paying enough attention to. Anyway, your next that could be a whole thing on its own.
No, politics is massive, but I think overarchingly, if I work in politics and, you know, I'm very interested in politics, it's to solve problems for everyday people. So if you said to me, you know, if you were in politics, what are the things you'd focus on? In no particular order, I would focus on supporting small business because it's what I know, it's what I love, and it's what I believe in.
It's the lifeblood of the country.
And it's the lifeblood of the country. I would focus on the nation's health and fitness, a critical problem right now. And very specifically, going back to business, I'd focus on fraud because I think fraud is crippling this country in so many ways, both on a micro and a macro level. You know, we look at the pandemic and what happened there. That's the macro level, right down to the laws around what directors can and can't do, how they can just close a company overnight, start up the next day, buy back the assets, leave creditors standing. It's not right. And
apparently, you know, it's so easy. That's what I'm shocked about.
Phoenix trading. It's legal. It's not illegal. If you do it in a certain way, it's not illegal. And I actually think there should be much tighter controls around that because it is not okay to leave creditors standing. It is not. You know, these are people who've worked hard. It's their profit, their self-confidence, their livelihood. It's not fair. And so for me, those are the three areas. It would be entrepreneurship with a subsection of fraud in particular. And my business was once the victim of fraud and I decided I wasn't going to let it go. And I spent 3-4 years working with a lovely female police detective at Charing Cross Police Station. We got both of them. One had got 2 years in prison, one got 4 years. And, you know, it was the principle of the matter. I know you were often told, don't do it on principle, it'll cost you. It did cost me. Emotionally, financially. Exactly. Go for it.
So tell me in our last few minutes, me what you're going to do next.
What I'm going to do next. Right. So I'm 60 now. So about 3 years ago, I had a bit of an epiphany health-wise. I sort of, you know, had that moment like many women of middle age where I looked in the mirror and thought, I'm really not happy with this. I think I'm disappearing into that life of sort of quiet desperation, as I describe it. And I don't want that. I'm 60, which to me is young, or it should be. What am I, or 57 as I was at the time, what am I going to do about it? Long story short, I hot-footed it to a place which focuses on nutrition as well as exercise, neither of which I paid any attention to. I used to be a restaurant critic for 10 years and I ate my way around the planet with great gusto. Never thought about what I was consuming. And they really sort of deconstructed me and reconstructed me. I lost about 30 kilos in weight, which is quite a lot.
And a whole nother body.
A whole nother body, yeah, small person. And I took up weight training, and that has been utterly seismic. That is like throwing a pebble into a pond and the ripple of benefits just goes on forever and ever and ever.
You look and feel and sound of a level of energy that is 100% different to who you were before.
Yeah, it just is. I mean, I celebrated by trekking to Everest Base Camp, and I just thought, because I can, you know, in the words of Edmund Hillary, why are you doing that? Because I can, and because it's there. And I think it's just, for me now, it's about how do I make the second act? And, you know, technically, there are going to be fewer years ahead of me than there are behind. But I do genuinely think they're going to be the most interesting, the most productive, because we grow. We have wisdom.
And
we have something to offer.
And
we have experience.
You know how to jump through hoops faster. Then
exactly.
We don't make as many stupid mistakes as we used to. Now we're like, that, how fast do I get that?
Right? Yeah, yes, exactly right. So I'm mentoring other businesses, which I hugely enjoy. So I'm really shifting my focus from my business to other people's businesses, which I absolutely love. And I am writing a book about health and fitness for women over the age of 45, 50, three chapters in. And I'd like to do more in politics. And that's kind of where it's going.
Love that. I cannot wait to hear more. Thank you very much for having
me. Oh, thank you.
So much fun. And it's literally like what Katie did next, isn't it? It's going to be like next. But one of the things that I admire about you and about, I think this is the joy of women kind of over 50, is that there is a place where you are so much more aware of who you are and what you can and can't do and will and won't do, that it gives you a level of experience and expertise that you're willing to go on. And all of it comes. I've been a health and fitness nut for, I don't know, like 15, I've run a health and wellness business.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a huge chunk of your life, hasn't it?
Massive
yeah.
chunk of my life. But yeah. you and I have one thing in common, which is that we're watching our mother's age at very similar ages. And one of the things watching my mother age is, so my mother has now got her, she turned 90 last month, and I got her a personal trainer. And so watching my mother change, and not everybody gets their mother a personal trainer at 90. And I was like, this is literally the biggest gift that I can give you and me, because this has yep. changed both our lives, because yep. we will naturally be the, over 72% of women are the carers for their elderly parents
yeah,
and elderly parents-in-law. And watching my mother shift and change how she operates because she's getting stronger in 4.5 weeks.
That's amazing.
Mind-blowing.
That's wonderful. Yes,
everything is about our health and fitness. So I applaud yeah. you 100% on that. And yeah. you know, anything that I can do to help, which you don't need, but if I can, I will. Because
oh, thank you.
One thing in the world, actually. Thank you very much. How do people find you? And the amazing, look at the beautiful decor behind you. How do people find you?
Well, Instagram probably, which is at @AlisonCork_home. That's going to be the easiest way.
Amazing. Thank you very much for joining me, Alison. It was really
pleasure.
Lovely.
Thank you.
My name is Geeta Sidhu Rob. I really hope you found this as much fun as I did. I swear I have these conversations to entertain myself and learn more about people I'm interested in, but I'm hoping along the way that you guys got inspired to look at and think. And, you know, there's such different approaches in life that people have, and every single approach has its own version of working out. So the one that you get called to do should be your version of working it out and enjoying it and thinking, well, look how much I can get done today. Look how much I can get done this year or in the next decade, as opposed to I'm really old and life sucks, which sometimes it does, but get over it, frankly speaking. My name is Geeta Sidhu Rob, and this is Activate Yourself.
Thank you so much for joining us. Our goal was to give you pause, make you think about your life, and inspire you to say, wow, what if I tried to do that? If they can do it, so can I. Did it work? Let us know by finding us on social media at Geeta Sidhu Rob or at Nosh Detox. We upload new shows every 2 weeks here. And if you start to miss us, check us out on YouTube.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.